the Togus Yaakov Yosef was a chassid only after he had lived a bit as a misnagid against the Baal Shem Tov. Not only was he a little bit against the Baal Shem Tov, he was very against the Baal Shem Tov. When he first came in to learn by the Baal Shem Tov, he wanted to know what the Baal Shem Tov's teachings were, what was so special about what Baal Shem Tov was teaching them. He really didn't know. He had no shekhes to anything. And the Baal Shem Tov was learning with them, and a man came in at the same time and said to him, he said, is there something here that needs fixing, Rabbi? The Baal Shem Tov told him, no, there's nothing here that needs fixing. And the man told the Baal Shem Tov, you don't understand, Rabbi, there's always something that needs fixing. As soon as the Baal Shem Tov heard that, he turned over to the Toldos Yaakov Yosef, said to him, and said, that's a message from HaKadosh Baruch Hu being given to this guy. That message is being sent through that guy to tell me that there's always something that needs to be fixed. So the man, the Toldos Yaakov Yosef was still, he looked at the Baal Shem Tov and said, listen, I hear you. That's not a message. Kadosh Baruch Hu was not trying to send you anything to this Amaris, to this guy over here. That's not really a message. Baal Shem Tov said to him, everything in life is a message. There's something that everyone is telling you at some point that is a message. Toldos Yaakov Yosef couldn't handle it. So he said, it can't be. There's no way that's a message. So Baal Shem Tov said to him, you can take it. You can understand it. You just don't want to. That's the line that Baal Shem Tov gave him. So Toldos Yaakov Yosef left a little bit later and he went outside, and as he was walking by, there was a non-Jewish guy with a bunch of bales of hay that was on the ground that he was trying to lift up onto this wagon that he had in front of him. And he turns to the Toldos Yaakov Yosef and he says to him, can you help me load the bales of hay onto my wagon? So the Toldos Yaakov Yosef was not the biggest of guys. He looks over at the things. He says to him, I don't think I can. I don't think it's shy about it. I'm not strong enough to do it. So the Nazir looks at him and says, yes, you can. You just don't want to. The exact same words that were given over by the Baal Shem Tov. Toldos Yaakov Yosef heard that and immediately realized, of course, there was a message being sent through everybody and everything in this world to be able to tell him something. And there's no question that there had to be something there. He immediately went back to the Baal Shem Tov and immediately became one of the Hasidim and ended up writing down most of the Torah that we have from the Baal Shem Tov directly comes from the Toldos Yaakov Yosef. That's what we have. We have this innate desire to work hard. It's deep down within us. It's sitting within us. We're not satisfied in ourselves with where we are. And really the honest truth is, it's an American mentality, but it's true, the mentality throughout the world, right? The American mentality of, it'll come to me, I don't need to work for it, is anathema to our nature. It goes against everything that we stand for. And although people say that they would love to just sit and relax and do absolutely nothing and let everything come to them, the truth is, they wouldn't do it. When it boils down to it, they can't handle things like that. That doesn't happen. You look at most movie stars, they'll tell you that, yes, they relax most of the year when they're doing their movies. They're going into their TV shows. They're up at 5, 6 o'clock in the morning. There are people who got their makeup done, right, starting at 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning, and they're working straight up until 10 o'clock at night. Now, lahavdil, alfei, elef, billion, trillion havdalos. Nonetheless, when they're working, they work like dogs. I know people who in this yeshiva, they could not get up for anything. Anything you did to them, they could not get up. And then all of a sudden, they get a job. And all of a sudden, they're able to get up for work. Every single morning. There's nothing that's able to stop them. See, you want to work hard, you just don't think you're doing much. And if you don't think you're doing much, then of course, you're not going to get up. What's there to get up for? You'll blame it on something else. Sickness of some sort. You know, it'll be something else. A headache, a stomach ache, things that cannot be positively defined. Things that if you would go to a doctor, the doctor would say, you're perfectly fine. You'll do it on that. But the truth is, you don't have anything there. See, that was why people had such a connection with a guy like Michael Jordan. Why people, even outside of Chicago, found him. Chicago being the main place, obviously. But they found him to be not just that he was a great basketball player, not that he was a clutch basketball player, and that he was able to hit that last shot in every game to be able to make sure that they won. It wasn't about that. I don't think it was only about that. It's that he was the hardest worker. There was no one like him. when it came to working hard, when it came to practicing again and again and again. And he treated each practice, all the players that were with him at the time, they all say that each practice was like a championship game. That they couldn't take it. It wasn't just a regular practice. He was going up hard against them. Hard against them. Like really playing. If it was the last game of his career. That's all. And sometimes it was. He just depended on how many times he retired. But each time, like he would say, like he would go fully, exactly the way it was. The truth is that Michael Jordan was not born the tremendous basketball player that we know him to be. He wasn't a great basketball player growing up, and we know that. We know that he worked himself to the point where he became that tremendous player, but he wasn't. He wasn't that way. He had a work ethic. I read in a story once that because he knew nobody in his family was over the height of 6'1". His brother never got over 6'1". His father was short. There was nobody in his family over 6'1". He used to stand in the park outside of his house, hanging on with both hands, hanging from the top of the swing set, stretching out his legs to try to get himself to be taller. Try to get himself to be taller. Shabonis willed himself to be 6'6". Willed himself to it. It's an amazing, it's unbelievable. Let's get off that for a little bit. The Sichos Moser says, based on the six parshas, HaKohen HaGadol Me'achov. It is the Kohen Gadol, but it's got to be HaGadol Me'achov. The Gemara tells us, it's in Vayikra Rabba as well, Chavav, that says that he's Gadol Behedvar. There are five things that he must be greater than all the other Kohanim. The Chachma in wisdom, the Koach in power, the Noi in his beauty, the Osher in riches, Ubeshanim, and in age as well. He should be the Gadol of all of them in all of these regards, in all of these aspects. But the Gemara goes through and says, what does it mean that he's a Gibor? What does it mean that he's a Gibor? How do we know that the Kohen Gadol was a Gibor? And the example given for Aaron is that in Parshas Balosa, he waves all of the Kohanim. He does a tenufa, like we do with the Lulav and Etrog. He did that to all the Levim. 22,000 Levim, he picked up and waved them in all six directions. So he has to have that Koach. He must be a Gibor. How else could it be? Why would the Kohen Gadol need to be a Gibor? So the Darim Lamed Chesed Aleph says that he must be a Gibor in order for him to do his Avodah, in order for him to get through his Avodah. In Hilchos Yisodi HaTorah, the Rambam says in Perek Zion, he says that Kohen Gadol, it's got to be a Gibor, not just in the way he is, but a Gibor B'midosa, in the way that he goes about things, that he has to do that. And we know in Perek Yavos, Ezu Gibor, Hakovish Yisra. But it seems we're talking about actual Gevurah here. So what is it? See, lazy people make two different claims. There's two different claims that any lazy person will say. Number one is, it's too hard, I can't do it. That's the first thing they'll say. And that's by far the easiest thing that rolls off the tongue. It's too hard, I can't do it. And number two is, I'm perfectly fine with where I am. I don't need to be any better than this. There's no need for me to work any harder. Those are the two claims that he says. Mesilas Yesharim, when speaking about it in Perek Vav, says, Ki ra'ata atzel ena bav v'batachas. The evil of the lazy person does not come just at once. Ela ma'at bo'at, ma'at ma'at, b'lo she'yod v'yargishpo. It comes little by little, slowly but surely, without him even realizing it. Without him even realizing it. He thinks he's doing what's normal. But little by little, it creeps up on him and he doesn't even realize. How many times do you have to hear a person say, just says, I know what I have to do, right? I know that I have to do it, but I can't. I just can't. Because it's raining outside, because it's sunny outside, because it's too cold outside, because it's too warm outside, because the sun is shining, because it's a cloudy day. Most ridiculous reasons in the world. But you hear the person, I know, I have to do it. But they just don't. What is happening? You know you have to do it. You realize that you're supposed to do it. It's right there in front of you, and yet you just don't. How? How is that possible? How is it possible for a person to say to me, I couldn't be in Seder on time today because I have to do laundry? What in the world? How could that be? How is that? That is, you can't find a worse excuse. There can't be anything worse than that. But that's what a lazy person is. He'll find any excuse. There will be anything in order to get himself out from what he really needs to do. Anything will be the perfect excuse. He doesn't need anything more than that. it's so sad that we treat Torah as the last regard when it comes to all these things. That everything else comes first, and our learning comes second to almost everything. That we consider it as, if I finish my studying, then I'll end up being able to stay there for a little bit more of Seder. If everything else works out, then I think Seder will be able to, I'll be able to go to Seder on time. But it shouldn't be that way. It has to be that Seder is number one, it has to be your learning is considered number one, and everything else is just the lazy man talking. The lazy man saying, giving an excuse of something else that's there. You know what else a lazy man does? He might bring Maimari Chazal or Psukim that'll explain away his behavior and what he's doing when he doesn't want to work hard. And it's clear that that happens all the time. Where a person is saying, here's what I'm doing and I'll explain to you why, because there's a Gemara. And the Gemara says the following. And meanwhile, the guy does absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. You know, I was thinking about it this week, and I honestly couldn't believe it. I went to Rabbi Sheinfeld with it, but Phil brought me up. You know, somebody was speaking in Divrei Torah with another person. And the other person said that we shouldn't be talking so much in learning on Shabbos. You're not supposed to talk that much. You should be quieter on Shabbos. Now, there is a Gemara that way. There is a Gemara that way. I don't think we talk in that way, Lahalacha. But there is a Gemara that says that you should minimize the amount of talking that you do on Shabbos. The Davar Davar. But I want to ask you, honestly, you're talking in Divrei Torah. What's the reason why you're following this Maimar Chazal? Is the reason why you're following this Maimar Chazal because you honestly think that the way that you're going to get closer to the Creator is by being quiet, not speaking out the Divrei Torah? Or is the way for you to become closer to the Creator is by saying, I'm going to speak these Divrei Torah, even though I know you should be a little bit more quieter on Shabbos? It just shocked me. It sounds like the lazy man's answer. I'm not accusing the other person that he was talking to as being lazy. I'm not accusing him of saying that. I just find it as a shocker. How could it be? How could it possibly be that's what gets into your head, that stops you from learning? Because you say, because an Oxlan will use any excuse in the book, anything, to be able to get himself from doing a little bit more, a little bit extra. Anything to be able to take you away from what it is. Then you see him. I would assume they had every excuse in the book. The Nesiim understood that there were donations that had to be made to the Mishkan. And they knew there was gold, there was silver, there was copper, there were all the things that needed to be donated to the Mishkan. And the Nesiim were maskim. The Nesiim were maskim. They said, fine, we're going to give. We're going to give last. We want to make sure that everybody else gives first, and we'll fill in everything else that's needed at the very, very end. And because they did that, Bnei Yisrael gave as much as they did. There was nothing left to give from the Nesiim, except the stones, the precious stones, which really fell on their doorstep. They really didn't have that in their own possession. They gave it over as it was. Because of that, a yud was taken out of their name. There's no question that the Nesiim had good reasons for what they were doing. They were afraid that Bnei Yisrael wasn't going to donate properly. They were afraid there were going to be things missing at the end. But that's the way of a lazy person. A person who's not lazy will say, I'm going to give now, and then at the end, if there's anything extra that you need, I'll give that as well. A person who doesn't want to give in the beginning, as much as he has his reasons and his sibas, his ideas behind it, all that's doing is pushing off the inevitable, which means you're being lazy about it. You're not allowing yourself to do it in the proper way. The Chovos Levavos writes in his Akdama, says in his Akdama, I had many reasons not to write the Sefer. Many reasons. But I realized that all of them were laziness. That's all it was. If I really wanted to, I could write the Sefer, and I did. Chovos Levavos wrote the Sefer, and without it, what would we be? Chovos Levavos wrote this paper to break his laziness. Rishon Shvadron, when he was much older, 90s, maybe 80s, did not have an easy time standing up, could not stand on both of his feet. Just was not very healthy. So he had to daven Shmona Esrei sitting down. One time when he was going through Pesukei Zimra, he motioned to his shamash that he wanted to stand up. So shamash assumed that he had to go to the washroom. So the shamash went by, lifted him up. Rishon Shvadron said, Mizmor Lasoda, standing up. Then when he finished Mizmor Lasoda, then he sat down. So after davening was over, that shamash, that gabbai, said to Rishon Shvadron and said, what was that? You don't stand up for Shmona Esrei. Why are you not standing up for Mizmor Lasoda? So he said, I felt that the reason why I wasn't getting up on Ismail Lasota was because I felt lazy. I felt like I could have stood up. It was hard for me. But I realized, I was like, I won't stand up for this. So I needed to stand up from Ismail Lasota. Tell me, honestly, how many times do you stand up from Ismail Lasota if you're already sitting down? You're going through Hodu. You're sitting down anyway. Now granted, Sephardim not included, because Sephardim sits down the entire time, even including Ismail Lasota. For Ashkenazim, you're sitting there by Ismail Lasota, right? How many times do you actually stand up? You stand up for those 3 seconds and then sit back down. You know what I do? If I realize that I sat through Ismail Lasota, I get up for the middle of Yehi Chavod. For 4 lines of Yehi Chavod. Just to make sure. I don't want to be that lazy person who's not getting up from Ismail Lasota because it was out of laziness. Why be the Atman? You can do more than that. You can push yourself a little bit further. You know, everything in the Beis HaMikdash was done with alacrity, done with hurry, and some type of running. It couldn't be done in a lazy fashion. The Chafetz Chaim, when he was younger, used to take, only the Chafetz Chaim would do this, he used to take boxes and line them up right next to each other, and then he'd take a big board and he'd line it up. And he would practice running up and down the ramp. So you could practice to know how to be able to serve when you're going up the ramp of the Mizbeach, how you're supposed to go up the ramp. And again, it's not easy to run because you have to have the Ksonis. You can't have big steps. So you have to run with small, dainty steps. Small steps. Running up and running down. Practicing that. He would practice going up and down. It was to show that that's not a way, that's not the way you should be in the Beis HaMikdash. Beis HaMikdash can't be done in a lazy fashion. How do you walk to the Beis HaMikdash when it's time for learning? I came here maybe 1:15, 1:20, no, 1:10, I would say. And around the time I finished lunch and I got something, I came back, and about 1:10 I'm coming inside and I see these two kids in high school walking to class, walking to Ivri. Right? As they're walking, you see them going slower and slower and slower with their feet like barely moving. At one point I thought, honestly, I thought they were going backwards. And I'm standing right behind them and they're right by the door so I couldn't get by them. And I'm like, come on, guys. Right? And they're just like, they both moved out of the way. Any excuse in the world to just stop completely. Right? And I walked through, I'm like, I turned around and was like, what's going on? Why are you guys so slow? So they turned to me and they're like, class. It was like so obvious. Of course, absolutely. I understand completely. So I said, I understand completely. I'm so sorry for thinking otherwise. But what would it be like if they were doing something that they would have wanted to do? For example, they had a baseball game at exactly that moment. If the Ivri teacher would have said, guys, we're playing baseball today, then obviously there would have been no slow, nothing. They would have ran. It depends on how you look at things. See, the Kohen Gadol has to be a Gibor, not only to be Kodesh Yitzro. He has to be a Gibor, a strong man with strong legs, a person who has the ability to do things quickly and in a strong fashion, and to be able to be strong, to be able to get up and do it, and not be that lazy guy who's sitting back relaxing, right, and allowing everything to run around him. No, get up and go. That's what it means. The only way to conquer the Yitzhar, the only way to vanquish the Yitzhar completely, is to be able to say to yourself, I am going to work. I am going to run. I'm going to make sure that this happens this way. And if not, you know what's going to happen. The Atzlan does not need excuses. The Atzlan will go further and further and further back. Slower and slower and slower until literally he is going backward. Until he's facing the wrong direction and running in the wrong direction. Going to something else entirely. It's not, it's fine. It's not, I can't. It's, you can, you will, you'll work it out. You'll make sure that things happen. If you get sick, I understand that. Depends on what kind of sickness. If you're going to get other people contagious, I understand. If not, yeah, nothing is going to help you sleep in the bed. It's not going to happen that way. Go to sleep earlier that night. There is no reason for that to happen in any other way. Again, if you're contagious, there's another thing that somebody else could get. That's a different story. Then you're actually sick. But otherwise, that is just your atzlus. It's just saying to you, no, don't get up, don't get up, don't do anything. Get yourself out of it. Move yourself. Get yourself moving. This was not an easy week for me. Personally, it was not an easy week for me. I got sick on Sunday morning. Still don't know when exactly it happened. Lost my voice completely. Whenever I lose my voice, it's gone. And I'm standing there waiting for a dinner on Sunday night. And I had to take medicine beforehand because I was just not I was not handling it well. My head was not into it. I could not think straight, could not think clearly. And for the first time in my life, I wrote down a speech word for word because I was a little afraid that if I'd go off kilter, I would just say some crazy things. And I was really afraid of what I was going to say. That's what happens when you're on cold medicine and things are like that or whatever it is. But you better believe that I'm going to that dinner because I know I'm speaking. So you better believe it. And not only that, but I still showed as much alacrity as I possibly could. I might not have been as excited as I usually am. Might not have run around like I usually do. But you still have to do things. You still have to do things. And it's hard. It's really, really hard. But I also know that I have my night seder. And when I came home after the dinner, I knew that if I took the time and I said to myself, you know what? I'm not feeling so well. I'll go ahead and I'll do this. I knew what was going to happen is I'm going to have to make it up over the rest of the week, and that's not going to be easy for me. So you push yourself. You push yourself a little bit further. But again, it has to do with how much do you want it. If you want it, if you really want it, then you'll do this. You'll go further. You'll push yourself further than you've done before. You'll make sure that it happens. I don't know how anyone started with Aaron HaKohen speaking the 22,000 Levim and saying, all right, guys, I'm going to wave you. I have no idea what that was like. I don't know if there was a really big lady out there who Aaron went up to and was like, okay, this is going to be a challenge. I have no idea what it was like. But I can tell you this, there's no question that Aaron had no problems bringing them all forward and saying, all right, let's go. And when he did that, he received the koach to be able to do so. You get more koach when you do such a thing, pushing yourself even further. Rabbi Cohen used to always say, who's the strongest person in the world? My Ezur Gibor, Akov Ishez Yitzro. And he used to say, like, if I would ask you who the strongest man in the world is, if you could look up, I'm sure you could okay Google it, and then find out that there's a guy who was able to pull an entire plane with his teeth. Just with his teeth. There is in the Guinness Book of World Records, there is a world record for the most amount of weight carried by someone's pinky. He was able to lift up with his pinky. The man had the strongest pinky. He was not the strongest man in the world, but he had the strongest pinky. There's even a record, it's amazing, for the strongest beard. The guy held on something with his beard and was able to lift up a certain amount of weight. I have no idea how he practiced until he got to that point. But he lifted up the strongest amount of weight. If you look up the strongest man in the world, I guess it depends, right? Would you consider a boxer the strongest man in the world? I mean, he could beat anybody up, right? Would you consider a taekwondo guy, a taekwondo master, the strongest guy in the world? Right? Is it going to be the guy who can lift the most, the guy who can pull the most? What is considered the strongest guy in the world? No, not exactly. So what is it? Rabbi Cohen always told over the story of Ramosha Feinstein. Little Ramosha Feinstein. 5'2", maybe. They're all how Ramosha was. Ramosha was 5 feet nothing. And when he was getting into a car, a very overzealous shamish of his shut the door on his finger. And Ramosha did not scream out loud at all. Nothing. Somebody noticed it, and somebody immediately opened up the door, and Ramosha's hand was crushed. So they needed to take him straight to the hospital. Ramosha did not say one word. Nothing. When somebody asked him later on, why didn't he say anything? Why didn't he scream out loud? Why didn't he do what's normal? It would be normal to scream out loud if your hand got caught in the door, and especially if somebody else did it to you. That would be okay for you to scream out loud. So why didn't he do it? Moshe answers simply, I didn't want to embarrass him. You can't think of a bigger gibor than that. It's an unbelievable gibor. Maybe in a different aspect, a different regard than what we're talking about, but really, you can connect them both. HaKov Ishez Yitzro is somebody who knocks down his Yitzhahara and does things with such a hurriedness, just a feeling, that he just wants to go about and do it. That's the way that we have to be. To go about and do it. Not to lazily get ourselves up and whatever, to bring ourselves there and to get ourselves, whatever we need to do. That's something I think we all need to work on when it comes to our chakras, when it comes to our davening, when it comes to our learning, when it comes to anything. Anything in life, it should be this way. To show that you're ready to go about the next step, the next thing, the next thing. As we say, it's going to be a long time to sleep later on after 120. You'll rest then, you'll be perfectly fine. Just run. And you should enjoy it. Because whenever you do something with that type of zrizus, you're going to enjoy it a little bit better. Try to work on yourselves to be a little bit more into it. Come to theater a little bit earlier. If you don't think you can do the full half hour or 45 minutes that I would demand of you to go earlier, then do 10 minutes earlier than what you're used to doing. Push yourself. Do more. See what you can do. And then we'll get to the level of zrizus. Outside of Oxus, level of Jesus, to be mezariz yourself, to do more and more and more. Shavuot Shalom, everybody.